right, welcome everyone to a new episode of the ATP Show. Here we've got my buddy Max Tuning. Woo! Some people know him as Deadlift Bra. Some people know him as the YouTube Lord. Now, more recently, people know him as like the Sour Candy King. So, he's in town for what? You're here for a wedding, right?
I am here for a wedding.
So thank you for stopping by. So I always like to start all of my podcasts with one simple question that kind of sets the tone. What do you describe as success?
Having the most amount of money in your bank account. I feel like the cliche thing that everyone is going to say is like, you know, like happiness and freedom and all that stuff. But it really is true, because a lot of people think that more money will means more success, but that's not necessarily always the case. I think success is just, do you get up and do you enjoy every single day, or do you go to bed going like, I hated everything about what I've done today?
You're like, damn it, I've got another 2 days until the weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't feel that way?
No. I guess I don't do the whole thing of, you know, people like, you know, don't like work for the weekend. But even when you own your own businesses and stuff, like, yeah, you're always working, but the weekend you still are like, oh, thank God it's the weekend. I can like chill on the weekends.
Got it. All right. And then I'm going to steal this from you. Who are you? What do you do? If you're in an Uber and someone asks you, what do you do? What would you say?
I keep going back and forth. I still kind of lead with, I usually like to say I'm in social media marketing.
Okay.
It analyzes, but it usually gets really quickly that I just say like I make YouTube videos and I own a couple businesses.
So no longer fitness man?
No, I never say. Well, if people ask me like what kind of YouTube videos, then I go, well, I'm kind of in like the fitness space. It's about like my life and vlogs, whatever I'm doing. Usually they're asking because I'm like, I have my camera with me. And generally then I'm always like, you know, I film whatever I do, you know, like eating a sandwich at your restaurant that I'm at that you're asking the question for. So I still identify as a YouTuber.
That's actually surprising to me. I thought you would have said something else.
Like what?
I thought you would have said like candy company owner, candy maker.
I guess when most people answer that, unless you really like talking about yourself, you try to give it in a way that says what you do, but doesn't have like this open-ended, like I'm about to have a 35-minute conversation. But I like talking about what I do, but the problem is when someone starts asking questions, I get so excited about what I'm talking about that they're probably like, hey, I didn't really mean for you to go into like a 30-minute spiel about your candy brand.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, cool. Stole that from you, man. That's for you. So for everyone listening, just to give a kind of little bit of a background, me and Max, we've known each other for what, like 6-7 years?
Something like that. I mean.
When we first met, I think.
I don't know. When did we meet? I mean, I've lived in Texas for 4 years. Then we had district for probably three. So yeah, I'd probably say about 7 years.
7-8 years. Yeah, I think Peter, owner of Ape Athletics, he introduced us, and I think it was just like perfect timing.
R.I.P. Harambe. R.I.P. Ape Athletics. Yeah. Two gorillas that we really didn't want to see gone.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I think it was just kind of what is the term for when just everything kind of works out timing wise?
Serendipitous,
because I think all three of us were looking to grow whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
And eventually we came together and opened a gym together called District Barbell, correct?
Yeah.
That was it.
I lived in Richmond, Virginia. Y'all all lived up here in Nova. And then I was the final piece of the puzzle of like, I was kind of, me and Peter were planning something, and then we were looking for like who wanted to be, how many people we wanted in, because not one of us could afford it at the time.
Yeah.
So.
And how did that, describe to the listeners how that worked out? Because everyone knows that I'm a trainer, I'm a coach, you know, I do all the fitness things. How did you come into play with this whole gym setup?
Well, I guess District was a product of everyone having specific needs that, you know, we were running into walls, right? So you as a trainer, whether it be I'm, you know, I have to work at a gym and give X percent to the gym because I'm training there and I'm not getting as much money as I could if I had my own space. Peter wanted to have a space for his clothing, and I also wanted to have a space for clothing because my clothing brand, Everford Apparel, was starting to, you know, really pick up, and it was running it out of my apartment. But for me, it was really to film YouTube videos, and I kept getting kicked out of gyms and whatnot. So we just all had our own needs, and we knew that we were very understanding of each other's businesses, and, you know, having three different kind of specific goals with like a new business, like opening a warehouse, is like unique that it would work out that three different businesses could flourish in one building. And it just, I don't know. I think it's like, we all were great friends, all very understanding. We were all laid back and we all wanted to help each other and work around, you know, if Brian needed to train clients, we knew that I'm not going to film videos in specific ways while he's training clients and vice versa. We would all kind of like figure out what, like, each person, it's not like we had like, hey, you get it from 2 to 5, that's your time, but don't have any clients for mine. It was more just kind of like, do you have any clients? No. Okay. I'm going to go do a specific thing in the video.
It was just being considerate, honestly. Just kind of like making sure everyone got what they needed at whatever times that they needed. Right.
And it was a game changer, man. And people, you know, I made a whole series on YouTube, but I look back at it now of us, you know, like painting all the walls and like installing all the ceiling tiles. And now I look back at it, I'm like, why did we do that all of ourselves?
To save money, man.
It really was. We didn't have like, and even if we did, maybe we just were so frugal that we're like, no, we can do it all ourselves. And we would spend, you know, 7 days painting instead of hiring, you know, all splitting paint. You know, what's the biggest thing that I always wonder why we never did? Is like the green carpet. In the office, like because the landlord was just like, oh, we're gonna put new carpet in there, and they put this green stuff that they had, and we're like, oh my god, it's so ugly. And not one of us had the idea of like, hey, we could all chip in and probably spend $300 each and get this replaced.
You know, half of the back office is still that green carpet.
Yeah, dude. We just were like, God, I guess we got to live with this. Guess it has to be green. We can't change this.
We did do the other half though. We turned the other half into a yoga studio. So at least we did that. But no, it's really crazy to look back. I've actually, I don't know when the last time you went back and watched all those videos of us getting the keys to the gym and doing all the remodeling and stuff, but I actually looked back at those not too long ago. It's pretty crazy to kind of rewatch those and kind of see where everything came from.
Cause my videos were so cool. You're like, damn, Max is a great YouTuber.
I also want to make sure I liked all of them, cause I may not have.
That's true. Then. No, it was such a cool, like, time of our life. Like, and that was the exact moment you guys were already essentially working for yourselves at that point. You know,
I was starting to.
Yeah. And that was like right when we opened the gym or got the keys was 3 weeks after I quit my job. Yeah. So it was like this timing of like, I'm gonna quit my job, I'm gonna go all in. And that was the first big step into true entrepreneurship for, I think, all of us.
Yeah, that's why I say it's like serendipitous, man. Like, it was perfect timing of all three of us aligning and opening that gym and like kind of just starting the beginnings of our businesses. You know what I mean? It was cool.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've ever like told you this, but I've told like my wife and my like family and stuff, like, I truly am grateful for you because you were the reason. I mean, I feel like you were the driving force of District Barbell getting open. You know what I mean? Like, you were the one that was pushing it. And, you know, without you doing that, who knows how long I would have been like stuck at like an export or a Gold's Gym, just being like a trainer, like in a corporate gym. And it's like, you know, I don't know if I've ever like said thank you to you, but truly, you know, you are one of the main reasons that kind of, maybe not force me to do it, but accelerate it.
I think we all pushed each other out of our comfort zones. Yeah. And I think not one of us was in a position then. And it's only until recently that I've, you know, taken on large risks by myself with like my own Sour Chips warehouse and stuff. But, you know, back then, like, if I couldn't have found you and Peter, like, I would have never just opened a gym by myself. Yeah. So it's like, we all needed each other at that. We met at the right point in our lives. We all were willing to take a risk enough. And because we had two other people to kind of like share that risk with, we a lot of weight, I think, was lifted off of our, you know, shoulders, because we're like, hey, you know, like, we can't fail with three of us.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty certain that this won't crash to the ground with three of us.
If one of us fail, hopefully the other two can pick us up.
And that was like even a concern when I would talk about going in with like partners and stuff. They're like, what if they can't pay the rent? And I was like, nah, they will. Like, they will. Like, it'll be okay.
Everyone will find a way.
Yeah. And like, none of us were like, you know, we never had any issue of like Brian's not paying a rent. He's always late, or like he doesn't do this. Like everyone was so, it was just this like flow of like everyone did everything and everyone like chipped in, and there was no task or like thing that anyone was like, I'm not doing that.
I don't think in the 3 years that the three of us owned that gym that we were ever late on any type of payment.
No.
Yeah. I mean, we're responsible people, man. We're successful.
We didn't know what we're... I think we had that gym for well over a year. And then at that point, we're like, oh, apparently we need business licenses to like operate. And then it was so confusing because they're like, wait, District Barbell's the business. We're like, yeah, but there's other businesses in it. They're like, you can't do that. I was like, well, we are. Like,
we've been doing it for a year.
Yeah, they're like, you can't have like another clothing brand in the gym. And we're like, well, we're going to do it.
No one told us not to.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think I was actually watching one of those videos where it was, do you remember when we got all those fire marshal problems?
Dude, I'd still tell people that to this day. I now, even at our warehouse, there'll be like literally empty boxes in front of one of the exit doors. And I tell my employees that I'm like, move that box. I was like, don't get used to ever putting an empty box. I was like, because I tell them about, you know, our porn shop neighbor who had a recycling bin in front of his door that you could move with your foot. And the fire marshal was like blocking a fire exit, fire hazard. You have to go to court. And he's like, oh no, I can move it in 3 seconds. He's like, doesn't matter. We had a leg press in front of one of the doors that we didn't use. And that he's like, oh, you can't have that there. We're like, oh, we know we just, I guess didn't process. You had to have a door clear. Cause we had another door. We'll move it right now. He's like, doesn't matter. You got to go to court. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But I'm going to move it right now.
Yeah. I think it was, there was another thing with the difference between power strips and surge protectors. That was another thing that we had to deal with.
Yeah. So, I didn't know that either. I thought all of the little like what would you call them? Like a power strip. Yeah, power strip. You know, like
multiple outlets.
Yeah, but there's, which in my head I'm like, why are they not all surge protectors? But apparently all surge protectors are power strips, but not all power strips are surge protectors. Yeah,
it's probably cheaper.
All squares are rectangles, but not all octagons are stop signs. Big facts.
Damn.
But yeah, he was getting on us about everything. And it's like, if you had an extension cord, you can't have an extension cord as like a primary way to give something power. So if you have a fan in your gym and it's run from an extension cord far away, like you can only temporarily use an extension cord. I'm like, come on, man. Like,
you had to go to court.
I did have to, there's a video titled like, we need a lawyer.
Yeah.
And because I made the video, we need a lawyer, I had a lawyer reach out. Noah was the guy.
Yeah.
And what's serendipitous about that,
pro bono.
He did it for free because his daughter was like, hey, you should help them. They need a lawyer.
Yeah.
That lawyer is still to this day works with Nabil to try to get his like visa, to try to get his citizenship.
Oh,
yeah. Like they're still like at least within the past year. Like I know that they still are working with him, but he started working with them because of this.
And it's just like crazy.
Everything like worked out.
Man, YouTube.
YouTube, man. YouTube. The power of YouTube.
The power of YouTube, man. All right. And then I also... Everyone that I have on the show, I always like to just kind of get a glimpse into their childhood, kind of how they were raised. You know, you said you were born in Richmond, right?
No, I was born in Roanoke. I basically was born South Virginia, and I just kept moving more north, like, the older I got.
Okay. And how long did you live in Roanoke?
Roanoke, which is like the boonies of, it's like the redneck.
Yeah.
And it's a place that I'm you know, there's always like, oh, you should go to this city. I used to live there. Roanoke, there's no one needs to go to Roanoke. It's like, it's the same as it was when I was five, and it's not cool.
You don't want to go back there, man?
No, I mean, I've been back there. There's a couple of my family members that still live there.
Has Taylor been there yet? Have you brought Taylor there?
No, I'm sure we will when I like go back and like visit my dad's grave and stuff in Roanoke and, you know, see my stepmom. But it's just not like the town has nothing. You know, besides those people, like, but no, I lived in Roanoke until I was 10. So I lived, because my parents split up when I was a wee little baby, like 2 or something.
Okay.
So I lived in Roanoke with my dad, my stepmom, and my brother until I was 10. And then at 10, I moved to Richmond.
Okay.
And then Richmond to then Northern Virginia, and then boom.
Okay. And then I always like to ask about people's educations, because... some people think that education is key to success. Others think not. How were you in school when you were a kid?
Well, first of all, I want to say you absolutely need education, because look how cool and successful I am, and I have a college degree, so that's the only reason I'm successful. No, I was a complete idiot in school, man. I actually just recently ordered, I don't know why I thought of this, but like a month ago, I ordered my high school transcript, which you can get
you can
for
do
like,
that?
Yeah, it's like $5. And you can go on this like Parchment website. That's the one my school used.
Yeah.
And you can get your transcript sent to you. I had a, in high school, I was always the, even in like elementary school, middle school, and high school, I was getting like kicked out of class, called my parents because of like just me running my mouth. I was always getting into trouble ever since I can remember.
So you were a troublemaker, class clown, bully. What were you?
I wasn't a bully. I was okay. Class clown.
Okay.
And I was voted class clown in eighth grade.
Were you dumb though? Like, were you smart in school, or were you just not paying attention?
You know, I like to say one thing of like, I just wasn't applying myself. It just didn't interest me. I graduated high school with a 2.6 GPA, like a 2.65 GPA. Out of 290 kids, I think I was like 230.
I was going to say, I think anything under a 3 is not very good, man.
No, it's not good. It's not good. And my SATs, not including the writing, I got an 880 on my SATs. And I was like, I didn't break 1,000. And I was like,
that's really bad.
It is really bad. So then I was like, I'm going to take these SATs again. And I think I waited like a month or a couple weeks, and I took it again, and I got a 990. I still couldn't pass 1,000, and I was like, fuck it.
It's good enough.
But no, I was just a C student, and yeah, there were some grades I was getting because I was just always running my mouth, and I was getting points taken off because I would get like C's in gym class, and my mom was like, "Oh, Max, what is wrong with you?
Stupid?"
Yeah, exactly, because I was just like getting points taken off, getting sat out, getting points taken off for that. But even just in school, I mean, I didn't. It wasn't like a passion of mine, but I don't think any kid's like, I love school.
Some do.
Except for the kids getting beat up, you know?
Yeah, man.
But I wouldn't say that I was smart. It was always like, I would like study and study and study, and I'd get to the test, and I just was like, I don't know the answers to any of this.
If it makes you feel any better, man, I think my SAT score was like a 1020. So barely broke.
Yeah, you're almost 1,000. As dumb as me.
And I was going to go to medical school and become a doctor, though. So.
But you didn't.
But I didn't.
Now you're just a guy who owns a gym, dude.
But I could have. I decided not to.
You know, one of my buddies in college, Paul, his entire dream was to go to be an orthodontist. He's Daryl's, one of Daryl's best friends. Whole dream. He was going to be an orthodontist. Daryl's going to be a dentist. Paul was going to be an orthodontist. And then he got into college. We went to BCU. And he had to go to organic chemistry. He failed it like he tried it like 3 times. Kept failing it. And he was like, I'm no longer going to be an orthodontist, and literally changed his entire thing. And now he's like a account manager, like Apex, like a staffing, but like his whole dream, because of one class he couldn't pass. He's like, I'm no longer being an orthodontist.
You know, they say that class is like what they call the weed out class.
That class?
Yeah. That's the class that weeds you out from going pre-med or whatever it is.
I heard it's a hard, I've never taken chemistry in my entire life. Yeah, actually, I've only taken biology.
It's usually that class that either makes it or breaks it. So if you don't get through there, usually you just find something else.
So in high school, like I said, I got a 2.6, and then I only applied to one school, which was VCU, because that's where my friends was going. It's only 30 minutes away from my house. I was able to keep working at the same job. And I didn't get in, and I thought I was like,
wait, what?
Yeah, I applied to one school. Why are you laughing at me, dude? God, you know, you're just like the kids in my class. I applied to one school, didn't get in, thought I was going to be a loser of my entire life. I was like, what is everyone in my high school going to think? Everyone's getting accepted. You know, Radford, West Virginia, UVA, Virginia Tech. And I couldn't get in. And I was like crushed because I was like, you know, now times have changed so much. And now it's like, you know, everyone's just like, oh, the internet's right. Like you don't need
school.
But then it really was, if you didn't go to college, it's because you were like dumb or you couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or you're like the reject. And then if you went to community college, as much now it's probably welcomed. If you went to community college, everyone would be like, you're either too broke to go to a real college or you're too dumb.
Oh yeah.
And so I went to community college, but for me, you know, in hindsight, it was like the best thing ever because it was a whole lot easier, way cheaper.
Yeah.
But for me specifically, the community college I went to, which was J. Sargent Reynolds, they had a campus that was 1 mile away from the downtown school I wanted to go to anyway.
Okay.
And because my friends that went to the VCU, they were a grade above me. So their sophomore year, like our plan was to already, even if I went to VCU, was to go into this townhome together.
Yeah.
So I still had my full college experience because instead of going to the school, like, you know, 6 blocks away, I would get on my bike and ride it the 3/4 of a mile to mm-hmm. the community college. So I still like lived downtown, went to parties. Like
it's basically like you went to VCU.
It is 100%
cheaper.
Yeah. And wait, I graduated
easier.
I graduated Jay Sargent with like a 3.8 GPA.
Damn.
It was really easy. And then I graduated college with like a 3.2 or 3.4.
Oh man, you could have went to medical school, dude.
I know.
You could have been a surgeon.
I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of times that I would double check my answers on the person next to me. I was strictly double checking. I wasn't copying. I was like, oh, they also got, oh, that one you didn't?
Yeah,
okay. I think your answer is probably better than mine. That's neither here nor there, dude.
So what did you study in school?
Business administration management.
What is that?
Well, it's the administration and management of business.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It's the most generic it's the most generic degree you can honestly get, like in business. That's what the reason I chose that is because that's what my friends are doing. And they were like, because, you know, my friend, he wanted to be in finance. My other friend wanted to own, like, his family owned car dealerships.
Okay.
And that was just like the, if you didn't know a general direction, but you wanted to work in like the business world, administration management, which a lot of people are like, oh, that makes sense with what you do now. I'm like, no. I haven't retained literally besides the term like LIFO, FIFO from accounting. I retained zero knowledge because I was just like learning the material enough to pass the test. And then I was like, you're gone from my brain.
Yeah.
I didn't have the mindset.
Yeah. I was just about to ask, like, any of that stuff that you learned in college, do you feel like any of it has been applied to any of the businesses you
literally did? Zero, because I can't remember anything. And they're probably like, well, it probably did. Like, I remember learning about like Sigma 6 and like the different belts of Sigma 6, which is like a business term, and then having different like levels of management. But I wasn't retaining any of that information. And I didn't start a business till years after I graduated college. It was like three years after college before I made a business.
Man, who needs college, man? There's the internet, there's YouTube, there's...
But for me, I don't regret college at all, and because it was a different time, but like I had... It changed me as a person in terms of my just social interaction. I had the best time in college. Again, yeah. Because I went to community college, I never once had a... all-nighter study in the library. Never.
You missed out. I did that every single semester.
Now, see, I wasn't a nerd, dude. No, I never pulled an all-nighter. I never really stressed that much. Like, yeah, there's some hard tests and hard like assignments, but I had a great time. I lived with my best friends. We partied multiple times a week for years. We played Call of Duty for like 7 hours a day. Like, I was just drinking Slurpees and whatever. And like, so it was just such a good social time for me.
Yeah. I was going to say, what did you spend most of your time doing in college?
Playing video games, trying to get with girls and playing video games.
Were you partying a lot?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We would drink probably like two or three times a week in the beginning. And then it would go up to probably like three or four times a week. Cause it'd be like, Tuesday would be dollar drinks at this bar called Starlight, and then Thursday was happy hour at Tobacco Company, and then like there was all these like, and then Friday was like, or Mondays was dollar Tecate beers at Baja, and like, so there was all these like, oh, on this day you go there because it's the dollar drinks or $2 drinks, and there's always like a night that is for something. And so yeah, I would go out like 3-4 times a week.
What about work? Were you working during college?
I've been working, so I got my first job. Technically, my first job was Chick-fil-A for like a month.
And then
I started wrestling and I got out of that. But I started working at this pharmacy that was like a soda fountain. It's like an old school pharmacy. It's called the Midlothian Apothecary. It's the best thing ever. Great people own it. For now, it's still there, but they're probably going to get out of it soon. But I started working there when I was 15. And normally people work there until they're like 18. Then they go to college and they leave the job. I stayed there until I was like 23. I was like the weird old guy. I was like 22 and all the other employees were like 16 years old.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, why are you still working here? But it was just so easy with my schedule and like the job was so easy. I would like deliver prescriptions I would ride around all day in one of the company cars, just blasting music and literally just driving to like retirement homes and delivering music. And then you would, like, I would just get paid to drive around all day. And it was
Pretty cool.
It was so easy. And it wasn't my car. So I'm flooring it and just like treating it like shit, unfortunately. And, right when I started college, I was like, oh, I don't want to work, mom. And I basically for like a semester, she let me and was like, but then after like a semester, she's like, Max, like you got to get to work if you're going to pay your rent. Cause my share was like $300 or something. Okay. My freshman year first semester, I did not work.
Okay.
Then starting back, that's when I was like, I went back to my same high school job.
Okay.
Cause it was only 25 minutes away.
Yeah.
So I worked at that job from 15 until I got my first internship, which was at like it's gone now, but it's called Scott Trade. It's like a stockbroker thing.
Yeah. So you worked there pretty much all through college then, mostly.
Yeah. Like then, 7 years.
Yeah. So when you graduated,
I've worked since I was 15.
Yeah.
There's been no, like, besides that, like semester I took off, I've never like not had like a job.
Since you were that old dude at the pharmacy and all these younger people there, were you the cool guy buying beers for everyone?
I don't think it's illegal to say now, but I definitely did. Yeah.
So you were that guy.
I was definitely like the like getting the 18-year-old kids like some like, you guys want some Bud Light? Dude, I was like, cool, man.
Yeah, sick, dude.
I was like, well, what party are you guys going to? Yeah. They're like, Max, it's already maxed filled. And I'm like, that's cool. I'll go to the next one.
And so you said you were wrestling. Like, was that in high school or was that college or what?
No, I wrestled from sixth grade to ninth grade. Ninth grade, I was varsity. Sixth grade, I wrestled at the 65-pound weight class. And the heaviest I got to in ninth grade, I wrestled varsity at the 112-pound weight class.
It's pretty good, varsity.
I was a small guy.
Varsity, though, in ninth grade?
I could have been varsity in eighth. My coach wanted me, because in eighth grade, you could wrestle for the high school. You could be JV, but you weren't allowed to be varsity because you were in eighth grade. But the ninth grade. But the guy that was in ninth grade was like so bad, and I kept whooping, because basically they would call it like wrestling up or something. But basically to decide who's varsity,
yeah.
Essentially, I don't know if it was before every game, but you would wrestle the other person, and whoever won, they're the varsity, and the other person is JV. And I just kept whooping his ass, and the coach was like, God, he's like, and this guy kept losing all the games, all his matches, and I like couldn't be varsity.
So you stopped in ninth grade. Did you do any other sports after that?
No, I did like...
No ball sports?
I did like peewee sports before that. I tried out baseball. I think I maybe got to machine pitch. Like, that's the stage I got to. I tried out soccer a little bit, but I was like...
No sports.
For soccer, I just couldn't like listen. Like, they'd be like, all right, you're like, I don't know, left field back defense. And I'd be like, huh? I'm just going to play forward. And they're like, Max, like, why are you with the front? Like, up there, like, get back to the... I'm like, nah, I'm just going to play the whole field. And I would just sit down, like, so I tried the other sports, and wrestling was the thing I was good at, even though I was a little scrawny guy.
Yeah.
But then I quit, which my mom didn't like, because she was like, oh, you could like keep wrestling and try to go to college and get a, you know,
a scholarship.
Yeah, scholarship.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got my job, I cared more about making money. And I was like, I either can't wrestle or can't work for a certain period of time, but I just didn't care. I was like, I'd rather work.
So for a while on YouTube, you're kind of known as the deadlift bra. So when did you get into weightlifting then?
So I said I moved into a townhome with my buddies who were like a grade above me. And for the first year of college, freshman, so that this was, I was, I guess, 18, 19.
Yeah.
This is 2008, 2009. My roommates would go to the gym because we literally lived like 200 feet from a Gold's Gym, which... Flash forward 5 years later, I would work at as a personal trainer for a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's Gold's Gym right in our parking lot, essentially. And they would always go to the gym, and I would just literally call them like idiots. And I was like, why do you guys go in the gym? That's so douchey. That's so bro. Like, and I would just be sitting there on the downstairs, like playing Call of Duty, drinking my full calorie Pepsi, and eating some Sour Punch straws. And they'd be go to the gym, and I'm like, you fucking losers, dude. Can I curse on this?
Yeah.
I'd be like, you losers. And I was like, I don't need to work out. I'm already getting girls, or I already have a girlfriend. I'm like, I don't care. And then sophomore year, we had the same roommates, give or take, the same main ones. And I had broken up with my girlfriend, and basically my buddy Tom comes down. He's always been, now he's not, but he's a shorter, like, just kind of like a bowling ball, like a really stocky guy.
Yeah,
like,
a jack dude.
Yeah, but just like thick, right? Yeah. But he was like, look, Max, he's like, you're really skinny. You need to gain some weight. He's like, I'm kind of fat. I need to lose some weight. let's go to the gym.
Yeah.
He's like, let's go to the gym. Like, I'm going to get lean. You're going to get big. We're going to get all the girls. It's going to be sick. And I was like, you know what, dude? Let's go. Like, I'm like, it's the gym is literally 30 seconds away. Yeah. So he got me to get a membership to the gym. And like, that was the changed my entire life. And it's funny because I remember he was essentially coaching me. I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I remember we'd be like bench pressing and he was very much a, all right, like, hey, go down to your chest on the bench. Hey, for squat, like go to parallel, go below, you know, don't let your knees, you know, forward. He was more like on the form and full range of motion. And I'd be benching. I'd have like, you know, eventually I remember when I get up to like 185, I could bench or even 135. I'd go down like halfway and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And he kept being like, go down to your chest, go down to your chest. And I literally would be like, dude, who cares? I was like, I'm not competing at this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, my weight's going up. I was like, dude, I don't need to go down all the way to my chest. And it's just funny how ignorant I was then. And when I talk to him now, he's literally goes, he's like, Max, if someone had asked me for like $1 billion, do you think this guy is ever going to like make a career out of fitness? He's like, I've never been more wrong about anyone in my entire life. Cause he's like, he's the guy who got me to fitness. And then I just ran with it and it changed my life.
Yeah. So like everyone at some point kind of just, you know, tries weightlifting and messes around in the gym and just like does the typical bodybuilder stuff. When did you get serious into like powerlifting and stuff then?
I guess I never really called myself a powerlifter. I think with any group of guys that goes in the gym, you start having that friendly competition of like, I can lift more than you at this exercise. And you'd want to, you know, it's like a little dick measuring and it'd be like, oh, dude, you can only use the 60-pound dumbbells. Yeah. I can rip out the 70s and stuff.
Yeah.
And just once I got a little bit more into the gym and, you know, I'm, you know, starting to do movements like the squat, like the deadlift, I started really diving deep into the research of, I'd go on like bodybuilding.com and started looking up these programs. And I don't remember like what it was that got me to start like trying out deadlifts. It was my buddy who got me into the gym,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't until flash forward a couple years later that, I started working out with my buddy, Paul, who's the orthodontist that could have been.
Yeah.
And me and him were very similar in strength.
Okay.
And we would just start doing these programs together. And then like the deadlift was always something that I just like was stronger than the other people that I was deadlifting at. Yeah. And no one understood it. Like, and I wasn't lifting like, you know, 500 plus pounds. It was even just the 400, the 450, when my friends were struggling, who were like more muscular than me, who looked bigger than me, who would be like, Max, you're so small compared to me. Look, I'm shredded. And I could just lift more than them on the deadlift. And I just were like, I don't know. And then, so I think it's because I was good at it, because I was strong at it, it made me like it more and it made me lean into it. And I just kept like, I'm like, oh, if I'm better than everyone in my friend group at deadlifts, I want to see like how much can I be better than them at it?
Yeah.
Because they would crush me at bench press and stuff. But I was like, I think it's deadlifting. I think I can get it.
And is that when you started getting into YouTube then? When you started getting serious about like...
It was. Heavy. So I got into strength. Again, I call it strength training rather than powerlifting because my buddy Paul and I, we would run this program. Because I started watching YouTube. I started watching people. I've been watching YouTube since the OG days, like 2007, 2008, when the platform started. And some of the people that I watched then, like Philip DeFranco, I still watch this day, which is like pretty wild that I'm still, I'm a huge consumer of YouTube to this day. Every day I'm watching tons of videos. Like I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got into fitness, I started looking up people on YouTube and I started finding like Matt Ogus and then I found Christian, Hodge Twins, Scott Herman, Scooby, you know, all these people, all the OGs. And I think it was Matt Ogus that started talking about this, program Jim Windler 531, and he influenced me to try this program out, and I think I've probably convinced thousands of people to try this program because he was just like, it just works. I remember the video of him talking about it. So I started doing this program, and then it wasn't until basically the first videos that I started uploading on YouTube were just single lifts that I was doing that I would then put those clips on bodybuilding.com of like, look how much I can lift. Okay. Here's my PR.
Yeah.
So the first couple videos of my YouTube, if you go back, I don't consider that the start of my YouTube because that wasn't me trying to do YouTube. That was just, I'm just filming my top lift to put it on a forum.
Yeah.
But my first couple of videos, I'm deadlifting like 540 pounds. I think my first video on my channel is me deadlifting like in Reebok Zigtex that are too big for me.
I do remember those.
Green neon shoes. with straps, and I'm like hitting like 420 pounds. But when I came onto YouTube, I had the problem with my strength is that I started out too strong. So now when I hit this wall, everyone thinks my progress sucks, but I'm like, I came out of the gate too strong. Yeah. So when I came into the game of YouTube, my deadlift was at 550 pounds or 540 really. Cause that was where I was at the program.
And where are you now?
650.
Damn. So it's only been 100 pounds, man.
Well, see, dude, you know, not to go on a whole side tangent here is not only it's easier to, for people to experience it themselves than me try to like beat it into like the young kids who think my progress sucks. And I'm just like, talk to me in 10 years and let me know how much, let me know how much progress you made. Yeah, yeah. Like
they'll find out
all the guys you're looking up to and stuff. Yeah, let me know if you look like them in 10 years. Yeah. Like, you know, like
they'll find out.
Yeah. And so with the strength is there is such a difference between going from 500 to 600, then 600 to 700. And, and people who have big strength, like will like realize that. And I've always said, I think that every man who is physically able to work out, doesn't have maybe any, you know, things going on with them.
Yeah.
I think that every man can deadlift 500 pounds.
Oh yeah.
I think, but, and I think most men can deadlift 600 pounds, but the people who can go above 600 is the few. I think a lot of people who focus on strength can hit 600.
Probably.
Yeah.
You got to put in a lot of time there. Most people don't want to do that.
I know. I'm just saying you could, but like, it's just like when you hit that wall, I pulled 600, bro, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Yeah. It was the Arnold 2016 or something.
I think I remember that video.
And I've put 50 pounds in my deadlift in like 5 years.
It's 10 pounds a year, man.
And it again, people think that's like crap progress. I'm like, when you get to 600, you hit a wall, Yeah.
There is a limit to how much the human body can lift.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get towards that limit, everything starts to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. You know, in Mean Girls, like the limit does not exist. The limit does exist.
For lifting it does.
And that's what, when I talk about, I mentioned to you earlier at lunch, I was like, hey, when I hit 675, which is this milestone of seven plates, or maybe I hit 700, I think I'm done deadlifting. And some people be like, oh, like you don't want to push higher. And I've hit a 501 squat. And like, you don't want to go higher. I was like, I don't think I need to.
He's like, why?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, what is that going to prove? I've hit these milestones that very few percent of people will hit.
It's like, why put your body through that? Unless you're just a hardcore competitive power lifter.
And I'm like, not only, I look at my frame, I'm like, dude, my body wasn't meant to put 550 pounds on my back.
No, I don't think so.
Like, and look at every single person that gets like later down their life that has problems with this. And I'm like, lifting all these weights, it brings me a different level of satisfaction than it used to.
Yeah.
And because now my world doesn't, back then I needed to deadlift heavier and heavier and heavier because I was the deadlift guy.
Yep.
I needed to be the deadlift guy. I needed to be the strongest guy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later down my YouTube career when I started getting into the, you know, the friendly beef with like Masthetics guys of who could deadlift more. And then when I wasn't in my little network of YouTubers, I wasn't the strongest deadlifter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, my world's going to come crashing down. And then when it didn't come crashing down because I wasn't the strongest deadlifter, I was like, wait a second.
Why?
I don't think it matters how much I can deadlift. I think people like me for just the shit I say.
Yeah.
And like the deadlift was what hooked them. And then, but now it's like lifting more weight, if it won't make me directly happier and it won't bring me more like success or money, then why?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be a top tier power lifter. Powerlifting does not provide me income. You know, there's some people that get inspired by me from lifting, but
yeah.
I'm like 95% of the people that watch me on YouTube, I can deadlift more than them. I can squat more than them. So it's like,
yeah. So who cares?
Yeah, it's like I don't need to prove anything. And I'll still to this day get comments of like, oh, you're like barely hit 315 on bench. The people who talk shit about my strength and my progress, the same people that like are maxing out at like 515 on a deadlift. And I'm like, shut up.
That's what I warm up with, man.
Mm-hmm.
So with like the YouTube thing, when did you start getting really serious about it though?
So, like I said, I watched a bunch of people on YouTube for about a year before I got into it.
Okay.
Nick Wright is who I still to this day give 100% of the... I take it back. I tried being a YouTuber before I started being a YouTuber. The videos don't exist anymore, but I tried having a channel and I would... It's when I lived above the river in Virginia and I made like three or four videos and they were like... you know, my muscle building meal, and it'd be like spaghetti with like meat sauce and like my wheat pasta and how I measure out everything. And yeah. But it was very like, hey guys, like I use, it was very monotone because I was like trying to be like the bro.
Yeah.
And then I did one, I think the video that made me delete the channel was back then it was more normal of like, you would give like flexing, like updates, you'd pose and you would like, and the bodybuilding forum guys would be like, oh, like yeah, you would rate your physique.
Yeah.
And I uploaded the video to put on the bodybuilding forum, and it'd be like, I've titled it like 24-year-old flexing muscles. And it's like me in my room just like, you know, flexing and like showing my abs and everything. And I started getting some real weird comments.
I was just about to say, man, what kind of response?
Real. It went into a different level of YouTube that I didn't know about. And it was just like flooded with these like comments that I was just like, I don't feel comfortable with these. And I was just like, okay, I'm done. I was like, this ain't for me. So then when Nick Wright moved to the area, he, you know, inspired me to get onto YouTube, suggested I get on YouTube, and really gave me that push that I needed to get myself going. But back then, it was just so different. Everyone was just making content because it was like a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
There was truly a fitness community.
Yeah.
There was only like, there probably wasn't exactly this, but we'll call it 10 to 15 YouTubers. And it's like everyone knew everyone. Everyone watched everyone's videos.
Yeah.
Everyone commented on everyone's videos. And it truly was this community.
Yeah.
And no one was making a bunch of money from it. Maybe you get a little bit of sponsorships or some free protein powder. And people were just putting out videos because it was like fun and it was this community. And that's so far gone, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like back then, it wasn't even about the money. Like no one even knew there was money involved,
correct.
Really.
It was like, now it's just a byproduct of it. But now everyone starts with the hopes to get the success.
Yeah, everyone
and the
wants to become like YouTube famous.
But that's the problem is like because I started making content before we made money, I think my stuff's a little bit more wholesome. Like, yes, now it's a business. But, you know, I guess it was more carefree back in the day. And the enjoyment I get from YouTube still to this day is the same reason why I loved doing it back then. And it's really the feedback I get. I get this dopamine hit when I put out a piece of content, and in that first 24 hours, I get the feedback of like comments of whether it be like, oh, amazing progress on your lifts, or like, this was really funny, or, oh, I relate to this. And I love that.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, what's the reason why? 'Cause you're one of the very few that has stuck to YouTube for this long, and you've been very consistent with your videos. I'm just like, why?
Well, my viewership's going down, but I have my own thoughts about that. But I think I've stuck with YouTube so much, as you can ask my mom or my brother, is whenever I found something that I was passionate about, I would just not really become an expert at it, but I would just go all in on the thing that I was like, If Max locked, my parents would always be like, you know, if Max like found something he loved, he's all in on that thing.
Yeah.
And that's what it was with, and I think for me, it's because with like school and even like, I was in, you know, not that it matters, but like I was in like the popular group in high school and stuff. But I always felt like I was like the outlier in the popular group. Like I was like, okay, I'm friends with all these people, but like I'm not the directly the first person in people. I guess I always felt just like this, like, I wasn't good enough at this like level. And I think with school, when I wasn't like smart enough, I was like, okay, I'm not good at school. I'm not good at like being the cool guy in the group. Like I'm around, but I'm not. And so when I started getting into like working on Jeeps and stuff, I was like, this is something I'm good at. I've never had something that I'm like, I'm good at this. Like, this is my thing. Everyone is like, you know, my buddy Matt was like the skateboarding guy, and he was the greatest skateboarder. And when I found the Jeep, I was like, I was that guy. I was like the guy who knew everything about Jeeps. And so when I got into YouTube and I started having success with it, it gave me this like confidence boost of like, this is something I'm good at. People like the thing that I'm doing. And there's very few things in my life where I've felt like I'm like just good at something.
Yeah.
And because I started having success, I was like, this is my thing. Like I just love entertaining people.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's something that I've thoroughly enjoyed. And I don't think you can't make content for 10 years and, you know, be faking it or hate it. And I really love it. And I even, you know, Taylor, my girlfriend, asked me a lot of like, hey, if you were to ever, you know, if something crazy happens with your businesses and you retire or like whatever, you have enough money, you don't do it. Like, would you, like, what would you do if you didn't have to work anymore? And I was like, I think I would just make cool videos.
Just keep making videos.
Yeah. And like, it's definitely bumming about like the viewership, but people are getting, you know, older and it's, they don't relate as much to me because of maybe what I'm doing and they've evolved. But, I just love making content.
Yeah.
And I love putting it out and I hate sitting on content. So I have my own podcast, Don't Be Sour. And one of the things I least like about it is that I filmed this content and I can't put it out in the world until like
later,
2 weeks, three weeks later. Cause I filmed it. I'm filming a video this weekend and it's going to be up on Tuesday. And even then I'm like, I wish I could film it all and have it on Monday. And like, I could film something on Tuesday and have it up Wednesday. I love like the immediate like dopamine hit of like entertainment.
So now like you've been doing it for so long, like, I mean, obviously you say you love it. You say you love the process. You truly just like doing it. But do you ever get bored? Do you get annoyed of like recording everything? Because you are a YouTuber that record. You pretty much let everyone into your life, right? So,
you know, dude, I don't even want to be like the guy that's like trying to sound like he like loves something and he doesn't like, you know, it's just so much a part of like who I am that like I really love it. Like I just do. And I like filming everything and I like the, you know, some people are like, oh, I want to go on vacation and just, you know, ride the jet ski and not have to film the jet ski. But like, I look at it as of like, I'm like, I can't wait for everyone to experience this experience with me.
Yeah.
And I love like getting back to the editing and editing a video and being like, oh, this is a cool thing. And yeah, I do live a lot of moments through the camera, but I just still to this day, there's not a day that I'm like, God, I hate making YouTube videos.
You know, if you think about it, though, you're actually documenting your life. So you can always look back.
And yeah, but the problem is with my titles and thumbnails, I have no idea what any... I'll be like, I remember this cool thing I did, but I have no idea which video it is.
But most people don't record stuff. So then like they, you know, even if they wanted to go back, they couldn't. So
yeah, I just, it's so much a part of like who I am and it's so normal to me. And I think I've done it in a way that I have the ability now to film anything that I do that I don't feel pigeonholed held into like something of like I have to film only this one thing or whatever. I'm like, oh, I'm traveling for a wedding this weekend, I'll just film what I do.
So I mean with the YouTube, obviously that's not your main business, but it does, you do use it to help drive like business, right? Like it helps kind of grow your it's businesses, right?
Absolutely. I've always called it the like core of everything. And back in the day, this is like a whole long tangent, kind of getting nerdy on like YouTube, like ad revenue and stuff. But for a long time, you could go back and find videos of me saying like, guys, like YouTube is like, you know, the nucleus and it's the powerhouse that powers everything. But but YouTube alone doesn't make that much money. Now it does make me a lot of money. And it is a very lucrative, just YouTube max, social media max. So that's like YouTube, the ad revenue, and then the brand deals and affiliates and sponsorships, like that world of revenue, which let's just call it max YouTube, not Sour Strips, not Everford, is an extremely lucrative thing for me. So it's almost like I it'd be dumb for me to stop.
Yeah, so you kind of have to now.
Well, I still do think it's a huge driving force for the other businesses.
Yeah.
It's also a huge income for myself. You know, with Everford, like if I stopped making YouTube videos and I stopped posting, like just if I fell off face the earth, our social media, Everford would drop by 80%, 90%.
Yeah.
Sour Strips, if I stopped posting, I think would maybe drop 10%.
Yeah.
I really don't think it would get affected that much.
Yeah. But I mean, like I think you're in a nice position where you have different businesses and you also are very successful in YouTube where you can use YouTube to, I don't know if leverage is the right word, but like you can use YouTube to help build your other businesses.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, would Sour Strips be where it is today if it wasn't for my social media? Absolutely not. Yeah. Like, because who knows if I would have ever had the idea. And I was able to leverage at really the peak of my popularity. It was just this perfect storm that I created with Sour Strips. And I launched it and it couldn't have gone better. But again, I had to build an audience for 7 years to be able to have that springboard of a platform.
Yeah.
Some people look at it as like, it's only successful because yeah. you have this big following. I'm like, bro, I've been making videos for 10 years.
Yeah. How many videos have you made?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I've put in the work. Yeah. You know, I made videos for, you know, multiple years while working a desk job. Like I've done it all.
Yeah. So like, you know, speaking of your business, obviously you do a lot of things, but would you say these are your two main businesses, Everforward and Sour Strips?
That's really it. My world basically is Everforward, Sour Strips, and social media.
Yeah.
So social media is that YouTube max. Like yeah. I said, brands, brand sponsorships.
And so now how did you get into, so Everforward is your apparel company, your clothing, which I wear a lot of. Thank you.
Love that. He wears all the short samples that like never came out.
Yeah,
you'll see bow tie and he's like, purple Everforward shorts. Yeah. It's a one of one.
Limited edition, man. but how did you get into clothing? I mean, because clothing is such a hard kind of realm to get into. So why did you decide to do that?
Well, now I would never tell anyone to get into clothing because it's very difficult and it's very frustrating. Yeah. All businesses are frustrating, but yeah. the clothing was just, and I guess it still is. It's not easy, but I guess it's just the easiest thing for people to figure out how to do.
Yeah.
Because there's so much information about it.
Yeah.
And even at the time, it was the thing. If you were a fitness YouTuber, you created a clothing brand.
Just make a t-shirt.
You had a merch or whatever. Yeah. But Christian would probably call me the first person to do it, but Gymshark and Peter with Ape Athletics, they inspired me. So I had done like the deadlift bra clothing. But I think I was the first person in our YouTube network of people to design a brand and outsource it from China and make it a brand that is not with Max, my name,
yeah, yeah.
And to use overseas manufacturing. I think I was the first person in our YouTube space to do that. Mm. Like I just was. And I got inspired from Peter and Gymshark. I was like, they're doing that. I was like, well, they're like not a social media person. They're making a brand.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what if like me as an influencer just created my own brand that wasn't, yeah, yeah. you know, something and not just screen printed. And it was just like, it was the thing to do because yeah. it was just like, you know, if you make YouTube videos, if you're a fitness, you make merch and then you start a clothing brand. And yeah. then when I started and everyone started like making the brands, it was just what you did.
I mean, you had a fitness YouTube, so obviously you create fitness clothing, but that is not all of what Everforward is, right? If honestly, I would argue that most of your clothes nowadays isn't even fitness.
Most of my content's not fitness.
Well, yeah, that too. But how did you, like, so like, I guess, you know, like you said, everyone, especially in the fitness realm, like even I make t-shirts that I like, you know, sell to people, I give it to my clients and it's just advertisement, yeah. honestly. But I haven't taken that step to create like a full-on brand, right? And so you've done that with the fitness, but how to have you morph that into whatever Forward is now?
So now it's much more of a casual apparel.
Sell khakis on there, man.
I do. Yeah, I went from compression pants to stretch khakis. Chinos, you know, to khakis and like leather belts and yeah. dress socks. And I guess it's because, you know, everyone... The idea behind the clothing hopefully isn't, yeah, you want it's to make money, but the point is to solve some sort of problem with any business. And it doesn't have to be something revolutionary. It doesn't have to be ending world hunger with your business. It doesn't like, it can be something surface level as like, I don't like the way this t-shirt fits me. I wish it was like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how my athletic shorts came to be is I mocked them after these Under Armour shorts that I would always wear.
Yeah.
And I love these athletic shorts, but I was like, there's a lot of problems with them. For yeah. example, and I'll give you some examples of like the pockets were mesh and my key would always catch on the mesh and like rip
it. Yeah.
yeah. Because I was like, they're really designed for like running, but I just hate yeah. that it would rip. And then the shorts were just 100% polyester. They didn't have any stretch to them. So I was like, what if you put some spandex in there? So that's like where like it's like an improvement, right? And I'm like, if I had this problem, I think other people have this problem
yeah.
and I want to solve it. So I started doing the fitness thing. So everyone starts with apparel to like, I hate clothes because of this. I'm making these because I want it to fit my physique or
yeah.
joggers. I hate this. And then it just started stemming into me trying things out. I'm like, oh, I had this like East Coast frat type of style. Like I was the only YouTuber. It was very interesting because like when I made videos for 3 years while I worked my day job, and whenever I'd make a video in my you know, work outfit, which would be like tucked in chinos with a belt and like a button down, which is the same thing I'd wear out on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
People in YouTube fitness were like, bro, your style is insane. Like, you know how to dress. And I'm like, this is just what I wear to work. Like, I just have to tuck my shirt in because everyone else like didn't know how to roll their button sleeves up and had these baggy shirts. And they were like, I don't know what color shoes to get. And like, they're wearing these like belts that are like three times wider than their thumb with like chinos. And I'm like, what are you doing? And it's just simple stuff. And so then I started just being like, oh, I'm going to make some clothes that are like what I would like to wear out. Like, I want to make a thermal or a bomber jacket. And it just started going down this route. And then the problem with Everforward was that I started being, in my head, I was like, there's going to be a performance side and a premium side.
Yeah.
And they were just so polar opposites that it was like, what does the brand represent? And I was like, I'm going to make the brand that you can wear a pair of stretchy pants with a logo. And then you can also wear a button down. And now I'm just leaning more towards, I'm like, I need a direction and I want to go more towards that casual type of like business, because I think at least in our realm, that doesn't exist to what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, if you do that, just try to keep the shorts around, man, the athletic shorts.
I know. I don't sell as much of those as I used to. Now everyone just loves those mesh shorts. Yeah. But like, again, I was trying to do a different angle. You know, you'd see, who was it? There's a company called like, I think it was called like Father and Sons or something.
I don't know.
But they would make like these button downs and they would have like, you know, 10, 15% spandex. They're really stretchy. And the models they would use would be this like super jacked guy wearing a button down with it like hugging his sleeves, but it's so like stretchy. And I'm like, no, that's not like, I want to make button downs that like, no, they don't have a bunch of spandex in them. No, they're not skin hugging. I was like, that's not what it's supposed to be. Yeah. It's not like,
normal people don't look like that.
Yeah, and you know, and I just wanted to go a different angle. Like, Christian would be like, look at this scoop neck tee. Like, you can wear this in the gym and out at the club. And in my mind, and even to this day, I'm like, I don't think the apparel I wear in the gym is what I should be wearing out to a bar.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's so diverse. I'm like, no, like, don't, like, there should be clothes for going out and clothes for the gym. And yeah, you can go like to lunch, but I'm like, if you're going to the club and what you're wearing to the gym, like, I just don't agree with it.
I agree with you, man.
Yeah. I'm like, you should have, like, your going out t-shirt should not be the same t-shirt you're sweating in the gym.
No, yeah. I agree 100%.
I just make clothes for the stuff I like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what you do. Yeah. Whatever you want, you just make it for yourself and then you sell to other people.
You find out what works, find out what doesn't, man.
I just hope people like it.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, you talk about how, you know, with the clothing, you were trying to, like, solve a problem. What about the candy company? Were you trying to solve a problem with candy?
Yeah, to be honest.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember back in the day, you were always, I mean, you were the sour candy guy. You always were eating sour candy.
I've been that before YouTube, bro. Like, when I said that I was playing Call of Duty, eating Sour Punch straws, like, I've been consuming massive amounts of like sour candy since as long as I can remember.
Yeah, because I mean, when I met you, I remember when we were at the gym, always Sour Patch Kids everywhere, sour straws, whatever, all over the place. So now, what made you decide to get into the candy game, considering how, I mean, seemingly hard it is, right?
Like, hard
how
are and old.
You,
and
yeah, like, how are you, what, like, what made you decide, I'm going to make my own candy, and I'm going to go against all the big players like Haribo and like, I don't know if Nestle makes candy, sour candy, but I'm sure they have some type of
they own different brands.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, how, you know, like everything leads to like something kind of changing in someone else's life. I mean, us meeting, helping like push each other in our businesses. That's how, like, you know, meeting different people. If I never met like Christian, my life would be a lot different. And when Christian started, Christian was like, how Max was to sour candy, Christian was to energy drinks.
Yeah.
When we would go to expos, I would get, I'm not even exaggerating, a pile of people would bring me candy and people would bring him energy drinks.
Yeah.
So Christian is a much smarter businessman than me, like clear, very, you know, 100%. And so he was like, you know, I'm the energy drink guy. I buy energy drinks all the time. I'm promoting energy drinks all the time. I should have my own energy drink. And when he did that, I thought it was crazy. I was like, bro, you're going against energy drink companies.
Yeah.
So I thought it was crazy. And he launched it, big success. And that really sparked a fire in me of like, I think I could do something similar. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to go the drink route. But I was like, candy just makes sense. Like, it makes sense. Like, and so I didn't really worry about like the competition. Like I knew my thing, and I've said this on every like interview or when I've talked about Sour Strips, is like, I know everything that's out there. I've been up and down the candy aisle.
Yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating, since from 10 to even today, like I, well, especially today, because now I'm in the candy world.
You're researching.
But I'm just always walking down the candy aisle. So it's like, I've seen everything. And when there's something new, I know about it, because it's not like now, you know, energy drinks, there's 10 new ones a day. You walk into the store. But I had seen everything, and a lot of the frustrations that I had, again, it goes back to solving a problem. Any problem that's how you start a business, is like, you look at the things you consume, the things you do in the day.
Yeah.
What problems do you have? What things do you wish, or like, I wish it wasn't like this?
Yeah.
And there are tons of other people that have the same thought that you do.
Yeah.
So my mindset was like, I have issues with the candy world because like there's things that I wish were different, and I bet other people wish that too. You know, like it would always bother me when I'd open a pack of Sour Punch straws and I'd open it and it'd be like all sticky and all like wet,
like,
or like
wet.
You'd open like a bag of Sour Skittles and it'd be like all wet and you're like, what is this? Or you'd open it and it's like new, super sour, and you'd eat it and you'd be like, this isn't sour like at all. Like it's, I'm like, they should be sued for saying very sour. And I'm like, who is their sour like checkoff person that it's like, yes, we should definitely say that's super sour.
Yeah.
So it just bothered me, and like I hated how like when you couldn't see into the bag, and I hated, and I thought all the branding was super lame. And then I also hated, it's like, oh, if I don't want to finish it right now, there's no like resealable unless you are a like a family size bag. And I'm like, and now I'm understanding why companies don't have like smaller ones, because it's expensive.
It's expensive,
and
man.
Yeah, it's hard to do. But I was just like, look, there's some surface level problems. And then with a candy like a sour, like a belt, like, you know, what Sour Strips is, I was like, okay, like this is a really good type of candy, but the problem is you have to go to you know, the mall, you know, park, go into the mall, go into that random candy store, open the bins.
Yeah.
Everyone's been touching it. It's like stale from being in there. You got to put it in a bag, and then you can go to the movie. You know, and it's like, it wasn't readily available. And I was like, okay, what if we had this belt type of candy that, you know, I love? And I was like, what if you could make it available at the store down the street from you, at every store? And what if you could create a brand around it? And I think, I was like, I think people will get behind it. And that's like the idea that I had. And then the branding kind of was a spitball between me and my buddy Joe of how we were going to kind of design the packaging. And it was just it's something that like shouldn't have worked as well as it did.
Yeah, it's crazy how successful Sour Strips is.
It's mind blowing, bro. Like it.
What do you attribute that to? Like, why do you think it has exploded so much? Like, would you attribute it to?
It's a true problem. It's what I've done is I've proven that people want it. Like, it's like you can't deny of like whatever idea that I had. You're like, people wanted this solution to these basic problems that you have, as surface level as they may be, of like the packaging design, the type of candy and it being everywhere and not at these random ass stores you can't go to, resealable, you know, like it was just all these little things that like, you're like, oh, no one cares about that. No one cares about that. I'm like, I think they do.
You know, I've given your candy away to like a bunch of my clients that, you know, these people have no idea who you are. You know, they don't watch YouTube.
That's the goal.
They're not on social media. And I'm like, hey, like, do you like sour candy? And they're like, oh yeah, you know, like I like Sour Patch Kids and stuff like that. I was like, I've got something way better. And they're like, better than Sour Patch Kids? That's impossible. I'm like, just wait.
Yeah.
So I give them a bag. They take it home. They have it. They eat it. They share it with their kids. They come back and they're like, that is the best candy I've ever had.
I guess I feel like there's people who are experts in their field. And as weird as this sounds, I think like my thoughts about candy, not even sour candy, about how the experience from visual to touch to taste to like the chew, I think I truly know. I can like speak for the people. Like as weird as that sounds, like if I had these problems, I'm like, these are big problems. If a sour candy isn't sour, it's not just because it's not sour enough for me. Like it isn't a good sour candy. And I just think that like, I just knew what people, because I was such a diehard sour candy lover, I made a brand that would attract me if I was walking down the aisle.
Yeah.
And I knew that because these brands aren't popping up every day, when there's a new trolley, a sour, something new, and you're in the sour world, you try it.
Yeah.
You always like, that's something new, I'm gonna try, because it doesn't happen every other time. and 95% of the time I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I put this candy that I knew was superior to the stuff that you could get down the street at your local gas station,
yeah,
I was like, people will try it because it's new, and I know because of how good the product is that they will come back and want more of it. And I knew I couldn't compete on pricing because I just can't compete with these billion-dollar conglomerates. I was like, yes, it is a premium candy. Yes, it costs more than anything else right next to it because I couldn't build a business with it, you know, being a dollar. And I was like, I am betting, because I know I would, even not even at the financial place I'm at now, I was like, if I found a candy that was so good, would Max years ago be willing to pay an extra dollar for the same amount of candy because it's that much better? And I was like, I think he would.
Yeah.
I know I would.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think everyone else will too.
Yeah.
And so that was my angle, my strategy, because I was like, I knew I would try it and I knew I would keep coming back. I knew I would be willing to pay the extra buck.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a really good product. And then my strategy of being, I knew I wanted to be separate from the brand. I knew that I needed to use my audience to push it, but I knew I didn't want anything about me on the packaging. Mm-hmm. I didn't want owner Max Tuning on the social media. I knew when I did marketing into stores, I didn't want to have like
your face
owned
on
by
it.
Influencer, which I see the strategy, but it's like, I want to be separate from it.
Yeah.
I want people to eat it and enjoy it and not care whose it is. And that was, and we started sending it to influencers and celebrities that helped us, because if influencers who were sending it to knew that it was owned by an influencer, they would be less open to promoting it for free, or less open to promoting it 100%. Because they'd be like, I don't want to help someone else get to the top. Like,
what is he paying me for this?
Yeah, exactly. So,
I mean, like I said, man, like I've given plenty of your candy to like clients of mine, and they give it to their kids and stuff. And these are all people that have no idea who you are.
More people that eat it don't know who I am than know who I am.
I mean, they always come back and they're like, where do you get this candy? And I tell them, I'm just like,
Scott Herman's calling me right now. We were talking about OGs of YouTube.
Nice.
I'll call you back, Scott.
But yeah, man, they always come back and they're like, where do I get this?
Yeah.
Give them the website or go to Target.
And it's super cool. And I guess what's interesting about Sour Strips that kind of like not really bothers me, but I guess with the success that Sour Strips has had, I feel like, as weird as it is, that I get more respect in the business world by people who also have businesses. And it kind of frustrates me because people almost act like the Sour Strips is now I'm a successful entrepreneur. And I was like, bro, I've been killing it even before that. And it's like, it took this for people to like respect me a little bit more, and like who are like older and they're like,
I think it's because you have a product that's in stores.
Yeah.
I think that just makes people think that you're legit. Like if you're sold at Walmart or if you're sold at Costco or something, then you're automatically just.
And you know, I've taken a lot of what I've learned from like Everforward and applied it to Sour Strips. And that also has helped catapult the growth of it. But another kind of frustrating thing is I put all of my energy for 5 years into Everforward.
Yeah.
And it grew from day one until it dropped when I launched Sour Strips.
Yeah.
But it grew since day one for 5 years. And I did 4 times more revenue on year one of Sour Strips than year five of Everforward.
That's crazy.
And it's more, and it just, it's like, you know, and I was putting my heart and soul into clothing. And it turns out, I'm like, not that like I clothing wasn't for me, but I'm like, apparently I'm not the clothing salesman. I'm the candy salesman.
Yeah, I guess so, man. You're the modern day Willy Wonka, dude.
That
should be your new title.
It's pretty, it's interesting, man. It's like I said, it's something that shouldn't have worked how well it did.
Yeah.
And the stars align, and I could go way in depth on everything, but like it'd be too long. But like the stars aligned about the timing and the way that I hyped it up and the release at the peak, and then the pandemic also had a huge impact on it in a good way. And then with the retail, and it was just this like swarm of perfect events that happened in the correct order at the correct time that got it to where it is today. And it's like, it's actually pretty wild to sit back and think. And like the brand is just, it's pretty stupid big. And it's like when I walk down the aisle and I see kids like eating it, the biggest thing that I think is cool is that there are going to be kids that are eating it as, that are 5, 6, 7 years old, they're going to grow up on this candy.
Yeah.
And that's what's crazy
to me. That's crazy, man.
Like, they're going to grow up and be like, Sour Strips is my favorite candy.
I saw you were giving away for Halloween.
Yeah, people took a ton of it, man.
I would have taken the whole display, man.
I know.
I would have been that guy.
Yeah, I was that kid.
So, I mean, at the very, very beginning, you talked about how if anyone asks what you do, social media, right? And then obviously you have a clothing brand, and then obviously you have a very, very successful candy company. How do you devote your time and energy into those main three things? Because those are the main three things that you do. So how do you divide up your time?
I have no idea. I don't have like a schedule. I don't like
do what needs to be done.
I just do what needs to be done at the moment that I happen to be like alive. Like I'm like when I'm at my computer, I'm like, oh, okay, I need to do some stuff for Sour Ships. Okay, then I'm gonna get. It's not like today's a Sour Ships day. Today's the number four day. Today's a filming day. Usually yeah. There is like more of a filming focus day.
Yeah.
But it's just I don't even know. Like I'm not. I don't have lists of things I need to get done. I don't have schedules.
So you just,
I should.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just wake up and then you're just like, all right, what needs to be done today?
Yeah, and I forget a lot of things and I'm like, God, there was something I was supposed to get done by today and I forget. And I'm still doing way more things with all the brands than I should. And there's like, but there's certain things that I get satisfaction with. Like every single, you know, even from Target, obviously, but every single store that someone finds Sour Ships in, that store, unless I take the back, it's because it could be through a distributor, but
yeah,
we'll essentially say that every single store like has gone through me to get into their store. So every single store, it's like, I want to carry Sour Ships. That email has come directly to me and I have decided, yes, let's sit in that store. Like I should have someone handling new accounts and stuff,
yeah.
But I'm the one, I still get all the emails from the dealer portal. And
when are you going to start delegating, man?
But I like it. Like as weird as it is, I like it. I like doing it. I like it.
Man. How are you so successful, man? You don't have like it doesn't sound like you have that much structure.
I don't.
So describe like a typical workday for you.
You know what's funny is I hired a financial firm because I like my finances are all over the place and I'm paying them a whole bunch of money to hopefully give me information that I'll do something with.
Yeah.
But in one of the questionnaires, things I had to fill out, they're like, can you send us your organizational chart for your company of like, you know, like who's in charge of what? And I was like, yeah. I don't have one.
It's me.
It's like me and Mona and Nick. And yeah. I was like, okay. They're like, well, who's the hierarchy of like who reports to who? I'm like, I don't know. We just kind of figured it out. Typical day is I'm up at 7 o'clock every day. I get to the office by I get off by like 8:30.
Yeah.
And it's just like whatever needs to get done that day.
Mostly computer stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm not filming a YouTube video, I'm sitting at my computer.
So and you don't go to like the warehouse and
no, I do. That. I do. So I go to the Sour Ships warehouse often. It's like yesterday, for example, I should have done this like months ago, but I was like, oh, right now I'm going to do some adjustments for some Everford samples. And I like was measuring t-shirts on the floor for like an hour, measured, send it to that. And then I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go check on the warehouse. And like most of my day is like looking at spreadsheets, to be honest.
Okay. So you literally just whatever comes up that needs to be done mm-hmm. then and there.
Yes. I don't like, there's no planned.
That's crazy.
Like every like Wednesday and Friday, I have a meeting with my department.
Yeah. Do you have meetings with your, like with Mona and Nick?
But we don't like schedule them. I'm just like, I just show up at the warehouse and I'm like,
hey, I need to talk to you.
Like he doesn't even know that like we're about to have a meeting and I'm just like, hey, let's go. And it'll be like an hour long. And I guess it's one of those things that like, it's weird. I'm like the most, it's wild how successful like my companies have been when yeah. there's not like the structure that should be in place.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-boggling, obviously.
Mind-boggling. My mind's all in a bottle, dude.
Yeah, man. Like, I don't get it.
It's, I guess, like structured chaos in my head.
Hmm.
And again, it's there's people that are a lot smarter than me that are, you know, even years ago and even today, would they be like, Max, like you need to implement these like certain aspects and yeah. certain things in your business. I'm like, I know I should, but I don't know. Like, yes.
If it works, man, if it ain't broken, just keep doing
even
it.
Like Sour Strips is doing, Sour Strips is like the success that it has with like, not only the amount of employees that we have is actually even more mind blowing because again, like there's no, I have no like sales department sales yeah. team trying like to like get
calling
new,
and like
trying to get new stores yeah, yeah. No, none of that, all that's through me. Damn, and it's like every store that carries Sour Strips has contacted us, every single store. We haven't contacted any single store. So it's like in my head I'm like, I don't need a sales team. Like I was gonna say,
but do you ever wonder if you were to hire, let's just say, one person that just their main focus is just calling stores and try and get you in,
No, because our biggest problem with sour strips is not in like a cocky way, but our biggest problem is not the ability to get into stores. It's our ability to have enough product to get into the stores that want it. The amount of chains that I've turned down, but it's like we can't. I don't want to promise something if we can't deliver.
Yeah.
But we've turned down nationwide rollouts and Quick Trip. We've turned down Costco. We've turned down Hy-Vee grocery. Yeah, because I'm like, I can't support it. How am I going to bring on Costco when Walmart wants to expand me into 4,000 stores, but we're only in 300? But I tell them we can't.
We're
selling out in Target, and they're yelling at me because we're out of stock on, you know, we're 10% out of stock on like Rainbow. So it's like, how am I going to put a new chain in if I can't get Target to 100%? And like, you have to balance this thing of like, you want to spread the brand out, but you don't want to piss off certain things, but you don't want all your eggs in one basket. And companies like Target and Walmart, they're like, I mean, I'm so thankful to have them, but it's like, you know, I still need to somewhat expand the brand into like the Midwest where we're not, and like into like Dallas into Texas. So it's like, I need to expand into some chains, even though I fully can't support crazy volume, but I need to like penetrate different areas of the country that we're not
just
in.
Just to get exposure.
Just to grow the brand.
Yeah. Dan, that's crazy. You turned down Costco.
I can't support because at this moment, I want to go into your store, and then some companies you turn down because like, it just doesn't work. Dollars and cents, like Buc-ee's is a huge gas station chain in Texas. Super popular. It would crush it in there. But like, what they wanted, some like ridiculously low price per bag, and like a 20% rebate for every bag they sell. And their sell on it was like, we move so much volume that even if you're making a lot less, you're going to sell so much candy in our store. And it's like, my problem isn't selling more candy. My problem is getting enough candy. So it's like, I can sell it, like, not in like a disrespectful way, but I'm like, I can move that candy somewhere else that's going to pay me
more
what it should be for the bag. So it's like, I'm going to sell out there, or why would I sell it to you? And it's not to like burn bridges, but it's more just like, it doesn't make sense for our business. And like, because I'm the sole owner of it, we haven't taken on any money, outside money. There's no debt on the company. So it's like, I need to be so strategic with getting the most amount of money per bag that I can, that like, that's the biggest thing is cash. Like, cash is king of cash flow. And because it, you know, I'm spending so much money a month to run the business.
Damn, that's crazy. I mean, I guess we can, I mean, we could talk about Sour Strips forever, but I mean, like, what are the major nationwide stores that Sour Strips is in so people could find it? Obviously Target.
Yeah. Target's our biggest account nationwide. It's been such a blessing.
Yeah.
I mean, all of our stores, like, it's
dude,
like,
every time I go to Target, there's nothing there.
And what's crazy is like, that's good. You know what's interesting is like, when you see a product in a store and it's like fully stocked, there's a ton of it.
Yeah.
In your head, you're like, oh, no one's buying this. It's like completely in stock. But like, every store wants every single product to be like that at all times.
Yeah.
So it's like, when we're sold out, you're like, man, you must be, that's so awesome. But I'm like, I'm getting literally
yelled at
by Target of like, give us more product.
That's what you get for skewing the data,
man. Yeah. It's so successful. Like, we're literally number one in our category. Actually, we're the top four. We're literally 1, 2, 3, and 4 of like Rainbow Blue, of like all the other candy.
Damn, that's crazy.
All of our flavors are the top. And it's like, because we're so popular, they're basically like, we know you're number one and beating them by a lot, but you could be number one and beating them by a whole lot if you gave us more product. And it's like,
just can't.
We're getting, we want more product. So it's almost like, hey, it's not a congratulations, you're sold out. It's like, you shouldn't be sold out, even though you're beating everyone else.
Yeah.
So it's wild. But yeah, we're in Target nationwide. We're in, you know, a lot of great trains, you know, like Texas, HEB. We're regional in Walmart, regional in like Safeway, Albertsons, in Quick Trip in like Oklahoma.
Okay.
But we're pretty much everywhere. Like, in any state, in any city, you should be able to get Sour Strips. And that was like the goal of what I wanted to do, is like, you can go to your local store that you're already shopping at and pick up the best candy.
Dude, that's awesome, man. It's like, I'm proud for you. Every time I walk into Target and see it, like, just hanging there, or empty, I'm just like, dude, that's sick.
It's truly been a wild ride. And like, I keep saying it's like something that like shouldn't have worked so well that it did. And like, now it's this beast that I'm just trying to feed. Like, it's like, I'm like, I can't, I can't stop. Like, yeah. I can't stop. I can't slow it down.
Yeah. Damn. That's crazy.
We're trying out here, man.
Well, starting to get pretty long. I know we got to head over to District soon.
We got to go deadlift.
Yeah, man.
That camera's so dark.
Oh, man. Why is it so dark?
Probably because you set it as manual lighting and then the lighting changed.
I don't know how to do that stuff, man. I'm not on YouTube.
I remember my first beer.
This is a pretty broad question, but I mean, from all of your successful businesses, YouTube, Everford, Sour Strips, what piece of advice would you have for people that want to, I guess, step out and do something new and start a business?
Well, I've stressed a million times about look at your life and the things that you buy and the things that you do and what are problems you have with those aspects of your life or things and how can you improve them? And that is the easiest way to find what your business should be.
Just find a problem.
Find a problem. It could be a physical product, could be a service of like, I buy this every day. I love this thing. I love going to this thing or using this service, but I hate this thing about it.
Yeah.
And then you just start going backwards. You're like, okay, if there's something that you have a problem with something, there's a ton of other people that have that same problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, can I fix this? How do I do it? And am I passionate about it? And find things that you're passionate about. You know, things that I work on, it makes sense. You know, a lot of people like, you hear all the time these like business gurus that are like, you know, I drop ship clothing hangers and I'm making like $10 million. I'm like, but I'm not the type of entrepreneur that like just wants to make businesses that make money that I have no passion for. You're like, some people are like, dude, I don't care if I love the product. Like I'm selling cat posters.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to sell cat posters. Like I really want to be all in on the things that I'm in. Does that limit my potential income? Probably. Absolutely. But I think the enjoyment,
it limits your happiness there.
Yeah, and it's not just like a quick buck. Like people can tell, especially online, of like getting behind something because they know you're passionate about it. They see why you're doing it, the reasoning behind your decisions, the reason why things are the way that they are, and hopefully you're solving some sort of problem. Again, it could be a pain point, an inconvenience. Literally, convenience is one of the biggest things that people like is a problem for people. Yeah. You know, with the Sour Belt type candy, it's like, the convenience of being able to get it at your Target is a whole lot better than driving to the mall and getting out and going into a candy store, you know?
Yeah.
Solve problems. Man, do things you love.
This is some good knowledge, man.
I try.
So what's next? I mean, I know you've got a podcast, Don't Be Sour. You're actually another thing that you kind of influenced me to do, this podcasting was your podcast, Don't Be Sour. So I mean, that's like a newer thing that you've been doing.
I'm really enjoying it, honestly.
It's fun, man.
Yeah, it is nice.
It's fun having you here.
Thanks, dude. It's fun being here.
But as far as like Everford, Sour Strips, what's next?
Sour Strips, it's keeping up with it. We have a lot of big moves and changes that are, going to come to fruition over the next year or so and just keep growing it and keep solving problems and improving the processes. I guess that's like Sour Strips. Everford is get it back to kind of like what it was, get a lot more focus onto it because I know it has still a lot of potential that it could be that's being kind of like squandered because of just my inability to let someone else kind of take control of certain aspects of it.
Yeah.
And then just as a business owner is learning to be the best boss that I can be and being a leader. And, you know, I started just making YouTube videos and hanging out with my boys at the gym, right? Yeah. I never imagined needing to manage, 20 people and have like emotions and have like personalities and have like drama and like people having like getting upset. And I'm just like, and it's just a learning experience and I'm trying to get better at it and be compassionate and realize you can't joke around with one person the way you can the other person. And you need to like, reprimand and be like, hey, this thing can't fly. And, I'm trying to like balance being a cool boss, but also being a leader and,
That makes me think about the stuff that we used to say in the back of District Barbell. Can you think, do you ever think about the stuff that we used to say back there? Just between
can't say that.
You can't be saying that with like other people around.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I can't joke as much with a lot of the employees. But just growing up. And then YouTube is just, balancing the kind of the mental aspect of, being bummed about maybe some engagement drop. But, I guess a lot of people would look at, my life and be like, oh, who cares about, let's say I get butthurt about like maybe views dropping and they're like, who cares, dude, you're making so much money. I'm like, dude, my passion. Like I care. And it's like, how do you know your bit? How do you get upset about your business? Cause it's not performing well. Cause it's not making as much money. And like, that's how I look at it, as like views and stuff. And so it's just like really accepting, maybe people have moved on in certain things, and just making videos that I'm compassionate about, because I've definitely, I can't make a YouTube video now like I could five years ago, where I just pick up the camera and film. Like, now I've lost that ability to vlog so casually. Now it's like, okay, this clip is going to go before that clip. How am I going to start it? How am I going to end it? Where am I going to go next? How is it going to transition? How am I going to end the clip? You know, and it's, just like mental enjoyment.
Yeah.
Balancing it. But YouTube, just keep pressing on, keep trying to entertain people. And, you know, I'm in a new, a year in, but a great new relationship with my girlfriend, and just, you know, making that flourish and continuing that, which has just been great. So
nice, man. Well, thank you so much for taking time to stop by and hopping on my podcast.
Yeah, dude.
Let's go lift, man.
Let's go pick up all the weight and then put it right back down.
Yeah, because you have a new YouTube series.
I do, The Power Prep. Yeah. It's live right now. If you're watching this, we probably have episode 3 up. We're doing our final powerlifting meet, I think. We're going to go out with a bang, hopefully.
700.
I just want anything over 1,400 total, dude.
675 deadlift at least.
I would love that.
Minimum.
You know, I always say, I'm like, when you compete in physique or bodybuilding, you know, you'll get ninth place and everyone's just like, dude, you look so good. You brought your best package. The judges didn't know what they were saying. Dude, you looked great, bro. And with powerlifting, it's like, if you either hit your lift or you don't, and then people will just be like, you didn't focus enough. You didn't do your training enough. You weren't like, it's just like, it's just such... No one's like, dude, you did your best. They're like, you failed the lift. You suck. You're trash.
You didn't get it up.
Yeah, you didn't take it seriously. Your diet was shit. You know, I'm just like, so I'm doing everything I can. I'm eating all the food I want, because I'm like, I'm not gonna let calories be the deciding factor.
Yeah,
I'm making sure I don't miss any of my training sessions.
Yeah,
I'm trying not to travel that much. I know I'm traveling right now, but I'm trying to really like actually focus on this.
Nice.
And we're gonna go out there and give 110%, dude.
Cool. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this podcast. You know, remember on YouTube to like, share, subscribe, whatever podcast platform you're listening to. Rate it, you know, share it with your friends and family. Max is going to help me share this, right?
That's right, man.
thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Max, for stopping by. And remember, everyone, don't stop achieving. Peace.
Bye.